Welcome to the Kindling's Muse podcast.
Hi, this is Dick Staub with another in our Journeys series, conversations with thoughtful creatives and cultural influencers on their life, work, and personal journey. Today, a conversation with the late George Sayer, author of Jack, A Life of C.S. Lewis. One of the most useful books on C.S. Lewis is that written by George Sayer. George Sayer is the former head of the English department at Malvern College in Worcestershire. He was a student, then a colleague and friend of C.S. Lewis, and has written a biography titled Jack, A Life of C.S. Lewis. It is published by Crossway Books. George, one of the most interesting stories in your book is your first meeting with C.S. Lewis.
Yes. It's a remarkable one. I was sent along to stand outside his rooms to get a reading list of books that I was to read during the vacation. Standing outside with me was a rather funny fellow with a curious, I described his face as puck face. he stood there, and he told me I was wonderfully fortunate to have Lewis as a tutor, because Lewis was a supremely good tutor, and he turned out to be that. I found out later that the man there waiting with me was J.R.R. Tolkien.
Amazing. Now, had you heard of C.S. Lewis before Tolkien told you that he was a very, very good mentor and professor?
Frankly, Dick, I knew nothing about him at all, and hardly anybody did.
Mm-hmm.
He had published two books, but they weren't under his own name, and nobody knew anything about them. I think they were amended.
You know, one of the interesting facts that emerges in your book is that the whole time you were a student of C.S. Lewis, he never discussed religion. And it raises the question about what place religion did play in his everyday discourse.
I think he didn't discuss religion with his pupils because he thought it was a great mistake to thrust religion at the young when they were at such a stage. They could easily rebel against it for life.
Mm-hmm.
He thought his college authorities would have objected.
Mm-hmm.
They objected quite enough to what he did anyway later on.
As he became known, though, through his books like Mere Christianity and so forth, did it inevitably become more part of his discourse with students?
I think it must have done. If they began the subject, I think he would talk about it. But when I knew him and was taught by him, he hadn't got so far as to produce those marvelous broadcast talks.
Mm. You know, if you could only know C.S. Lewis through reading his books, which of his books would you say most capture the man that you knew?
Oh, Dick, that's a very difficult question. The sum of him in all of his books, the sum of him, perhaps not the nicest side in Screwtape Letters. You've got his clear, logical belief expressed in wonderfully simple language coming out in Mere Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a quite different Lewis, rather a sad one, coming out in his last book, Grief Observed. They all have something of him,
but
several others have too.
That is what, in fact, makes him such an interesting person, I think, to so many of us, because you can't capture who he is in any one work. He had a complexity about him that required expression in a variety of different fields and subjects. And you learned a little bit more about him through each of them. When you look at him as a person, what would you say his most remarkable qualities were?
His devotion to our Lord, his commitment to Christianity, out-and-out commitment. Yes, I'd say that was it.
Hmm. When you think about the events and experiences that most shaped his theology, what would they have been?
studying of the Bible, reading of the Bible, reading of the Gospels, really, most of all, I think, he went through a very difficult to describe conversion experience, mm-hmm. which convinced him that the Gospel story was true, was quite true. I think his conversion really was based on that.
Now, there is, in A.N. Wilson's biography of C.S. Lewis...
Yes, I know it.
...a discussion of a debate with philosopher Elizabeth, was it Anscombe?
Yes.
And Wilson says that Lewis lost the debate and told you, George Sayer, that his argument for the existence of God had been demolished, and Wilson said the bullying hero of the hour had been cut down to size. Can you tell me about that debate and that moment and its importance in Lewis's life? Because, as you know, A.N. Wilson makes quite an issue of it.
I think he makes far too much of it. I've not met Anscombe myself, but friends of mine who have known her have told me that she was very surprised when she heard that Lewis thought she had won the debate.
Really?
Yes. Anyway, she said that she wasn't arguing seriously. She is herself a devout Christian. She was producing the kind of argument which philosophers produce when discussing things with each other.
Now,
she was arguing a case.
Now,
and she was quite upset to know that she had upset his belief.
But did Lewis tell you that his argument for the existence of God had been demolished?
He thought there had been, yes. He thought that few arguments, his belief in God was not demolished, but he thought there were few rational, logical arguments for the existence of God, and he thought his were not sound.
What did you say to him when he expressed that view?
I probably said, "Really, Jack, why do you go on believing in God?"
Oh, we've got to take a quick break here. We'll be back in just a minute, George. I want to talk about some of the egregious claims that are made by other biographers that you have, in fact, dealt with in your book, because I think it's important that as people become more familiar with C.S. Lewis, they get a true picture of him and not a distorted one that has, in fact, come through some other biographies and in fact, through some impressions created by this film, Shadowland. We'll talk about that. We're talking with George Sayer, who is, of course, was a student of C.S. Lewis, then a colleague and friend. His book is titled Jack, A Life of C.S. Lewis. I've read a number of the biographies of Lewis, and this one, I think, does the best job of really capturing C.S. Lewis and really setting the record straight. One of the most disturbing biographies I read was that of A.N. Wilson. He makes some claims that other biographers of Lewis have argued rather vigorously are not true. And I'd like to, George, if I may, raise a few of them with you and see how you would respond. For instance, A.N. Wilson, throughout his book, describes C.S. Lewis as an intellectual bully. And as a matter of fact, in the film Shadowlands, the Anthony Hopkins version, they pick up on that idea that Lewis... took great delight in kind of bullying his opponents. How would you respond to that?
Quite untrue. He liked level argument. He liked arguing to come to somebody capable of taking him on fairly. When he was talking about somebody less well equipped, talking with someone less well equipped intellectually, such as I was, he was very gentle indeed. On the other hand, if as a student you were very lazy, you hadn't done the work he'd set you to do, he could be quite severe.
Mm-hmm.
I've never known him to bully.
Now, another story that is told in A.N. Wilson's book has to do with the end of the term parties. He says, Wilson says that the object of these was to get drunk, and that they were evenings filled with bawdy conversation full of obscenities, and that C.S. Lewis himself was quite delighted in participating and even kind of coordinating and sponsoring that nature of event. Was that your impression of those end-of-term parties?
Totally untrue. I've never known him get drunk himself. I've never known him tempt other people to get drunk. When offered, he did like a glass of beer, and he did like a glass or two of wine.
Mm-hmm.
But I've known him, when offered an extra glass, reply, say, no, thank you. If I drink any more, I shall get drunk. And that one must never do.
Well, and his own brother, of course, was an alcoholic, and so C.S. Yes. Lewis knew the dangers of that.
He did, better than almost anybody.
Yeah. One of the issues that A.N. Wilson implies is in the area of personal sexual purity. Wilson suggests that he had consummated a relationship with Janie Moore, who, of course, was a woman 26 years his senior, and later makes the same allegation with Joy and says that Douglas, her son, came into the room when she and C.S. Lewis were in a compromising situation. And that is very difficult for people who read Lewis to understand or accept, and I understand even more so for someone like you who knew Lewis.
Douglas, Wilson maintains that this remark was made by Douglas during a program he recorded at Wheaton College. Lyle Dorset, the director of Wheaton at the time, has played through the tape, listened to it, and it's not there.
Mm-hmm.
He's also gone through the printed version, and it's not there. I don't know, well, and Douglas has also, when asked, denied it. I think it's, I don't know where Wilson got the story. I think there's no basis for it at all.
And the same would be...
I'm quite sure myself that they never had sexual intercourse before their marriage on Joy's hospital bed.
That would be true also of his relationship with Janie Moore, which everyone agrees was a rather unusual relationship.
I don't know about that. I think it's quite possible they did have sexual intercourse. If so, it was something of which Lewis repented later.
Yeah.
This, of course, was before he became a Christian.
Yes, absolutely. In the movie Shadowlands, there is this hint near the end when he is sitting talking with Jack, who in the movie is portrayed as a young boy, that C.S. Lewis lost his faith when Joy died, or that it presented a level of personal pain that he couldn't reconcile with his belief in God. You've made comments about that in the past as well.
I think he found it difficult to reconcile this with his belief in God. He was shattered when she died, largely because he'd prayed immensely hard that she wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
She seemed to recover from cancer a year or two before, which he regarded as an answer to prayer.
Mm-hmm.
His friends tended to regard it as a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
I think he hoped, and possibly even expected, that something of the same sort might happen again. But he realized after her death that he was really praying in the wrong way. He was putting himself first, Joy second, and God last. He ought to have put God and the will of God first, and Joy second, and himself last. He learned that lesson through the rather awful experience he had of seeing Joy die of cancer. And I think, in fact, his faith became deeper as a result.
What is your most pleasant personal memory of C.S. Lewis? A time that you personally spent with him that when you reflect on his life, brings you the most gratification and satisfaction?
It's really the example of his deep personal faith and commitment to Christ. His simple devotion, his existence as a man of prayer.
Can you think of a time, an experience that you had where you observed this in him that really stands out specifically?
Not really. It was in so many of the things that he did. It was part of his everyday life.
So there was a consistency about him.
There was.
What do you think most Americans most misunderstand about C.S. Lewis?
I don't know. You tell me.
I think my own impression is that through his writings, one gets the sense of someone who is intellectually astute, but one doesn't get the sense of personal warmth that I hear people like you describe in him. And I think, too, American evangelicalism has been so influenced by the holiness movement and fundamentalism that many evangelicals have historically struggled with the fact that C.S. Lewis did drink, did smoke, did find those not altogether unsatisfying experiences, and furthermore that he would marry someone like Joy, who herself was rather brash and uncouth.
She was.
In other words, C.S. Lewis defies being placed in a tight little box. There was a robust, real nature to his Christianity that allowed him to live outside of some of the narrow theological conventions behaviorally.
You put it very well, I think. Could I comment on those points?
Yes.
Firstly, he never had experienced of the non-smoking, non-drinking Christian culture,
yes,
which is common in the, well, particularly in the Middle West, I think.
Yes.
Anyway, in the United States. His father, there was tobacco in his father's house. His father smoked. The other men in the family smoked. His father drank some whiskey every day. When he went to school, there was beer on the table.
Yes.
And in his parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
He therefore took the drinking of beer and wine and the drinking of small quantities of whiskey at night as normal and natural.
Yes.
So I don't think he can be seriously blamed for that, or even blamed at all.
No, I agree. I agree with you. It's just people, I think, in the United States have placed, personally, my impression, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of people do want to place C.S. Lewis on a pedestal. And because he was such a real person, he really won't allow any of us to do that. He will defy us in our attempts to do that with him. Is that true or not?
I think you're quite right.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I think attracts many of us to C.S. Lewis, is he is an example of a person that had fully integrated his faith into his intellectual life, his emotional life, and his personal walk in a way that made him able to be an authentic and real person and a Christian all at the same time, which is so difficult for so many of us to achieve.
Again, I think you put it very well, if I may say so. I think that the conception which you've got through reading Wilson, that was a rather solemn, unhappy, guilt-ridden creature, obsessed with rather guilty fantasies, who sought relief from his inner conflict by an over-dogmatic faith, in bullying argument, and at times even in deep personal drinking and bawdy talk, is all nonsense.
Yeah,
it's entirely remote from my own experience. He was, in fact, nearly always cheerful. He took spontaneous boyish delight in many things. I can't think of any body talk whatever that came from him. He was courteous and considerate to those he was with, and more concerned with the welfare of his friends than with his own welfare.
Hmm.
He himself, you know, lived very simply, in you could almost say in poverty. Mm-hmm. He never wore a wristwatch, and he dressed in a very shabby way. He disliked spending money on clothes,
mm-hmm.
and he gave away, you know, all the earnings, all the very large royalties that came from his religious books, books such as Mere Christianity and the Screwtape Letters. He gave them away to people who were in distress, poor, and to good charitable causes.
Well, George, I thank you for taking time today to share some of your personal insights into a most remarkable man, and I appreciate it very much.
This concludes our conversation with George Sayer, author of Jack, A Life of C.S. Lewis. Thank you for listening to The Kindling's Muse. If this program sparks something in you, I invite you to participate at www.thekindlings.com. That's KINDLINGS. Share this program, tell a friend, or just leave a comment at www.thekindlings.com.